Said a hip, the hip, hip hop, you don't stop. Rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
It's the wrap every Friday at this time from 8:30 to 9. I like to have a couple of friends here in studio. I try to get people who don't always see eye to eye and everything. Sometimes I succeed, sometimes I don't succeed. But the goal is for us to hang out and talk about the news. Joining me in studio this week, I have Alan Gray, a longtime friend. He's a public sector outside sales rep for Sesco Lighting. And John Singley, a little bit newer friend, but somebody who does some amazing work here in Escambia County. He is the founder and the key actor behind Studio 850. You can find on Facebook. They cover all the meetings. John, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to be with the best conversationalist in town.
Oh, you're very kind. Alan, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
And I appreciate the compliment, John. That's a very nice thing for you to say about me.
Wait, he was kind of looking your way, wasn't he, when he said that?
I feel like it was about me. I really do, and I take all compliments.
So lots of stuff that we could talk about this week. This Monarch Place development, I know, John, you've been following that pretty carefully. Alan, I know you are always interested in, you know, development issues and how construction professionals deal with things like traffic and water runoff and deforestation and all of that stuff. I'll start with you, John. The residents are frustrated. You know, I've taken some video. I've seen how the stuff works. Nobody wants to find a subdivision being developed behind their dead-end street ever. But there are zoning laws and property rights exist for a reason. Where do you think this ends up? I mean, is there any real remedy at this point for any of the problems? Is it just put up with it until the thing's done? What do you think?
Well, I think the county certainly is focused on it now. Commissioner May said yesterday that it had his full attention, but he said that from the very beginning. I think that the developer is sensitive what's going on. I think what you got here, Andrew, is, and Commissioner May hit it on the head recently, he said it's easy to develop rural property into large subdivisions, but when you come into this infill proposition, developing inner properties, you have a lot more to deal with. And I think that's where the developer ran into problems with this neighborhood. And I think that the neighborhood has learned that it's a difficult process.
Yeah.
That they have to be involved from the very beginning. It's hard to jump in once the permit's been, development order's been issued. So I think there's a lot of learning has occurred here. And the answer to your question is, I think it'll be better for the residents over there as the development is built out. The big question is, what's going to happen once it's built out? Mm-hmm. The arguments the residents raised during their appeal to the Board of Adjustment are still out there.
Right.
The size of the streets, the cars, the traffic,
even the
sidewalks,
the water.
The water, all of that. And I think that goes back to bigger questions, huh? Al has wrestled with this for a long time. When you do infill construction, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah, because you're totally changing the nature of the neighborhood. You're changing the way water runs in that area. You're obviously changing the visual appearance with the deforestation if that happens. And, you know, look, I hate to see trees go, but I like to see houses built both. I mean, you know, I'm on both sides of that. And this is one where, he apparently didn't do the right kind of, digging of the hole so you could have retention pond or handling the water beforehand, but I went by there the other day, and you know, mostly that's been solved, I think.
Well, we had a lot of the residents wanted to know once the county came out there after the second flooding
rains,
event,
right.
Why didn't they stop the construction? Mm-hmm. And the answer the county gave Studio 850 was that we would like to stop the construction, but if we don't build those retention ponds now, this is going to get worse the next time it rains. So they allowed them to continue. Now, I think the notice of violations, I just learned last night what the penalties of that are, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of people.
Are they small or big?
It's an interesting thing. The penalty for failure to obtain a land disturbance permit, which was one of the three they were cited for, is you must immediately apply for the permit.
Okay.
And you will pay four times the original cost of the permit.
Wow.
There is no monetary, like $10,000
fine or something. It's just whatever the permit would have been, you're going to have to pay a penalty
exactly.
version of that.
Exactly. And we're going to report on that sometime today.
All right.
Yeah, we call that the quad fee. And and it's a penalty. It is definitely a penalty. It's not something you want to see, because you don't budget for it when you prepare for a job. So quad fees, they stink. They're not fun. They're punitive. But when you're looking at a project of that scale, this is not me putting in, you know, not me just rebuilding my fence without a permit.
Right.
Building a fence without a permit, that's a couple hundred dollars.
Right.
You know, there is, you know, a different scale to this. And I think what some folks want is they want a little bit more bite to the teeth, if the teeth are even there, on the regulation.
And I listened to him talk last night at the county commission meeting too, and he's frustrated because he feels like he's being misrepresented, the builder, and he feels like, you know, the media is out to get him and the residents are obviously unhappy. To my way of thinking, I mean, I just always think, is there not a better way? And to me, the better way is always, can you go and talk to the people beforehand and, you know, get involved with them? Of course, the risk you do is, hey, I'm thinking about building a couple hundred, you know, townhomes behind your dead end street. You know, at some point you would let people know about that, and you're going to get a fight even before you've got any approvals. And
that's right.
But, you know, if you want to coexist with people, you know, there's a certain, and to my mind, kind of the Christian approach is, well, hey, you know, maybe go out of your way to try to listen and meet and not wait until after the fact when lawns are flooded.
I've been in some communities, Andrew, where the local governments are much more proactive. When they first receive a request for a development permit, they actually, the local government will go into the communities and make sure that everybody is aware of what's happening, what the process is. I think now...
Well, that's part of the rules. I mean, you have to. There's notification requirements. There's no choices being made on those matters. They have to notify. And it just depends on the type of development. It actually creates a different radius and the intensity with which the notification occurs. Like you were saying, Andrew, it would be ideal if they could go ahead and go in right from the start saying, hey, guys, here's our renderings of this new thing we're going to do that we've already paid all the architects to create. And we're never going to change that again. What do you think? But the realities are you get site prep done. You start looking at foundational issues, foundation permits, and then you might have basically a bulking or you have a massing of the way the property will be developed. But you don't really know. And if you showed somebody that early 2019 version of what this was going to look like, and then when the financial realities came to hit you and you realize, okay, we're not going to have a community pool, we're not going to have a walking track, we're not going to have the trees, we can't afford anything but turf grass, and the three buildings we thought we were going to have, we only have the one, and it's the center, and it's now round. Then you get everyone upset because you've done something different. You're now a liar. There's really not a whole lot you can do to make it a soft landing, except for being an exemplary developer showing the lead on how to take care of the environment you're going to disturb. And then there's the number one thing that you have to do. Any developer needs to know this rule. You have to find out whatever's going to be bulldozed first, and you name the neighborhood after that. Whispering Pine, Babbling Brook.
The thing that's gone is going to be memorialized.
You figure out the one thing you're going to take out, and you name the neighborhood after that. Then you've hit all the check marks on the development
box. Now, in this case, naming it Monarch Place would be a bit of an ominous variant.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were some chrysalises that were smashed during the making of this neighborhood. So perfect. Well done.
8:43 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Let's talk about the Pensacola Police Chief search. We're now basically done. There's the formality next week of the City Council signing off on the Chief Randall coming from Newport News, Virginia. As you know, John, you're in these Monday morning press briefings with me all the time. It's been a bit of a bumpy ride ever since the decision was made to go look outside for the first time in PPD history. What do you think now that we've kind of got this decision made? You've had a chance to, you know, hear from Eric Randall and obviously, you know, other concerns. What do you think?
Well, my view of all of this is I'm biased by the many years I spent in the military where we change leadership every several years and an outsider always comes in. It's always a bit of a challenge up front, but the outsider always brings fresh ideas, fresh thinking. He sees stuff that we had overlooked for many, many months, if not years. And so I'm biased toward outsiders coming in. Now, I understand, obviously, if you love to live in Pensacola and you've been on the force for 20 years or whatever, you feel like you have a right to compete. But I always think fresh blood is good for an organization.
Well, I certainly hope that turns out. I think we all, I mean, I was certainly against that, but I've said this before, I'll say it again. If I'm on the other side of a decision that gets made against what I believe, I'm wrong. You know, I always want the better outcome if it turns out to be.
I will say, though, I have lived in Newport News, Virginia.
Okay.
Right across the river there in Norfolk. And Newport News, Virginia is one tough blue-collar town. And if you can succeed in Newport News, Virginia, you can succeed just about anywhere.
All right. Well, I talked with him yesterday in an interview we did yesterday morning, so I'm optimistic. Alan?
I like to stand behind the idea that we had a system in place with which we were doing the hiring and the matriculation through this ranks. And Kevin was brought in through a national search, and it was a good, robust search. We found a good candidate for it. He worked through his paces, and the timetable just shifted on him a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that it was a bit of a robbery from him. I feel very bad for the police department members that support him and wanted to follow him through and do everything. I feel very, very bad for them. In my opinion, maybe the guy needs to probably rent a house because there's a new chief coming through at the real mayor's desk in about 18 months. So probably rental's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, that's my opinion. And listen, if it's not great, it'll be short-lived.
Yeah.
And then it'll be Chief Chrisman. And if it is great, well, we'll see at that point.
Nobody wants the captain of the plane to do a bad job.
Right, exactly.
Ever.
No, not for
and,
sure.
And I don't think that's going to be quite possible. Again, a chief is a figurehead. He's not the one that's going to be pulling me over or you over for our speeding offense or any of that. But you don't want, a complete disruption in the system that we do have in place. And I think that's what we found.
And as always, I think the key thing here is if we had a failing, broken, problematic department, that would
blood.
Be one thing. But with something that works so well, the argument is very different. 8:46 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm joined in studio for the wrap by Alan Gray and John Singler. We're going to take a quick time out. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives. She is most likely to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Voting ends today, 8:48 on News Radio 92.3, AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay, joined in studio by my friends Alan Gray with Sesco Lighting. He's a public sector outside salesman, and John Singley from Studio 850, who does great work online. Check him out if you're not familiar. The bridge is always and forever since Sally the topic of conversation. Let's start there. We have... Everybody is assuring me, without taking ownership for the date themselves, that we will hit the Memorial Day date, and several people have expressed optimism that prior to that, we might have the two lanes open, maybe within 10 days or something like that. I'm a believer of when I'm driving on it that it's open. But one thing, Alan, you mentioned to me something off the air that I want to raise as a question that I had the same exact thought. And I love it when, the old saying is that great minds think alike. And the unfortunate truth is that mediocre minds also think alike. So it's not
highly mediocre.
It's not a guarantee of good results. But, you had a thought about how to handle the two lane, one lane each direction being open.
So what we're going to have on opening weeks, maybe month, is just going to be a bit of a stricture on one section of the bridge where there is only the available two-lane section. The other half towards the walking path isn't present yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not there yet. And because of that stricture, you're not going to have the entirety of the bridge span with which to do the normal traffic that we did appreciate, the skinny 11-foot, 12-foot, and the skinny 11-foot, 12-foot on the other side. You're only going to have two at that one point. So that's your limiting factor. Because that's there, and because we still have Garson Point that we're working with every, 60 days to keep the toll off?
30.
My thought was this, and we know this term, it comes around during hurricane season and the big evacuation, contra flow lanes. So when there's a big issue and you got to get people out of Miami, they'll take 95 and go contra flow. Mm-hmm. So each side of the six lane, all six lanes are evacuating people north out of the path. So my thought is this, in the morning, where are most people coming from? Gulf Breeze.
Right. Or to Bar on the Beach. But yes, all through there.
Or the beach
right.
and the Gulf Breeze. So it's mostly coming in the traffic from that direction. So in that port of the morning, for let's call it 2 hours, 2.5 hours, everything on the the Chappie Bridge.
See, I know. Yeah,
Andrew,
I know. And you were an advocate. You advocated for this. That's
fine. I'm digging a little bit. But every vehicle on that one is going to come from Gulf Breeze to Pensacola. So we're calling that westbound, right? And that stops at, let's call it 9 o'clock, 9:30, and then dual traffic happens again through the whole rest of the day. And then at 4 o'clock, or let's call it 4, 4:30, whatever it needs to be, it's only traffic from Pensacola originating and then heading to Gulf Breeze, or eastbound traffic only. And that lasts for, let's say, 2 hours.
I am 100% on board with this. This is, to me, this is the only reasonable way to open two lanes on that bridge, because what you're trying to do is alleviate the pressure on Garcon Point. That's the key. You're trying to alleviate the pressure on Garcon Point and Avalon, Tiger Point, I-10, all of that stuff. And the best way to do that, when you have limited functionality of that bridge, two lanes only, is to use both of them as inbound during the morning and outbound in the afternoon. There are some people who, of course, go from Pensacola to Gulf Breeze in the morning and go from Gulf Breeze to Pensacola in the evening.
And they've got Garcon Point.
Who will not benefit from them. But they will benefit because there will be less traffic competing against them on Avalon.
That's right. So
they will have a better ability to flow through, even though they are not directly benefiting from that particular transit route.
That's right.
I'm annoyed that we haven't had this conversation yet.
Well, I haven't been on the air yet,
I certainly
Andrew.
Hope that FDOT is considering this. John, what do you think?
I think it's a great idea. Works well in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. You've seen it where it goes.
You remember with Avalon, remember in Garcon Point, I was an early advocate of, can we not make that contraflow? Can we not do two lanes in one lane? Can we take the middle lane and make it what they call a suicide lane, like in Phoenix where they do this, and it's not all the lanes, but it's some of the lanes. And FDOT basically said, no, terrible idea, unsafe, whatever. And I said, okay, fine, I'll keep it to myself. But this 100% makes sense, especially during the peak hours. That's the whole idea.
And if we keep the idea that we do have that connective tissue of Garcon Point for the travelers of 98, they're just typical travelers.
Absolutely.
You know, there's 20,000 trips are not from Gulf Breeze to Pensacola, Pensacola to Gulf Breeze every day. The other 35,000 probably are. We have a $55,000 vehicle usage on that bridge right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all just Pensacola Gulf Breeze, but this lion's share is.
And not just for volume, which is, of course, the advantage, but what do you have when you have only two lanes of traffic going against each other? You have a far more risky traffic environment than you have with both lanes going in the same direction.
Right.
So, God forbid, I don't want to say it in advance, I hope it never happens, but Three Mile Bridge, historically, there's going to be traffic problems, there's going to be crashes, because people are dumb, that would mitigate against that if at the peak times you had traffic going only one way or the other way. I'm completely on board.
Well, then get your Alex Andrade interview together. I'll talk to Alex and Doug, and we'll
see if we can't make that happen. So it's a perfect idea. 437-1620, if you have a question for my guests, you want me to ask them. The other piece of this puzzle is, anytime, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe a week from now, we're going to get the ferry is going to operate out to Pensacola Beach. They're just waiting on Coast Guard approval. There was one safety system checkbox that they were missing. I have never been an advocate, although, again, I thought it was a boondoggle to start with, and it was never going to be all that useful, but I'd rather be wrong after we make the decision and commit to it. I hope I'm wrong. This is going to be the chance, assuming they do start service imminently, to find out, are Pensacolians really willing to ride a ferry instead of drive around? What do you think, John?
No. I think we're wedded to the car.
Mm-hmm.
The car will always dominate. The ferry could be a tourist thing to do, family outing or something like that. But I don't think in this state, maybe in this region, that we're prepared to invest in these type of low-demand intermodal transportation things. I know the bicycle clubs and all of them, they struggle. This morning I passed a group of bicyclers coming up Barrancas there, traveling bicycles. Gosh, mm-hmm. only knows where they were from. And they were dodging cars all along up onto the Bio Chico Bridge. It was really scary.
I'm a fan of multimodal transportation as a bicyclist myself, and yet I'm under no illusions that Pensacolians or Gulf Breezians or whatever are going to give up our cars.
Okay, let's just back up a quick. What's the term for a group of bicyclists? Is it flock? What do we call those groups? A herd?
It's a gaggle.
Is it a gaggle? Okay, so let's
They're
go
most
agree.
Like geese, that's right. Yeah.
And I think we can agree in the newsroom fully, it's a gaggle. Is it a gaggle of bicyclists?
Sure.
A gaggle of cyclists. Okay, well, I always wonder that because, they've got to have a name for that. I wonder if they call themselves.
There probably is a name.
Maybe we could ask the listeners what that.
See whether it works. It's a bit pricey, And also, just as a side note, the other frustration for me is, I'm suspicious it's the Gulf Islands National Seashore that's dragged their feet on this, but Vista Park in Gulf Breeze is a perfect stopover. It would help those folks get back and forth to Pensacola. And yet, somehow, some way, we have a dock that the ferry is not going to be able to use.
Yeah, I think, Andrew, that situation at the dock in Gulf Breeze is one of the sad stories post-Sally.
Yes.
It was just a solution waiting to happen. But no public government or nobody came forward with an emergency amount of money to expedite the rebuild.
I mean, the dock down at the other access point, I can't remember the name of the park, that would have cost money. But the one at Vista right off of 399 is available. It's open. They could park there right now.
I don't think there was a will to make it happen.
Somebody texted in and answered our question. You know what the name is for a group of bicyclists?
Let's hear it.
A Peloton.
Goodness.
Yeah, which is not a good name in the news right now, but the Peloton is the name for the main field or group of bicyclists in a race. Wow. So, yeah.
So, Andrew, look, I know we're getting close to the wall here time-wise, but I got to tell you, I give props to Alan, that Contraflow idea, maybe the smartest thing I've heard this week. Maybe.
And I'm also a great conversationalist, Andrew.
No, I've lived in cities.
And he's pretty, and he's tall,
regionally
and he
renowned.
Doesn't mind saying so.
Aww. No, I've lived in cities, and I've commuted in contraflow situations with the zipper trucks and the zipper lines and all of that.
Yes, yes.
It's easy.
It is. You adapt to it. It's so funny. Not to bring up things that we're trying to ignore at the moment, but like roundabouts, this like Pensacola can't adapt to it. Come on, we're not that bad. We're not that backwards. We can do it.
Next time you have Captain Davis or anyone from the police department, I want you to ask how many accidents have occurred at Langley and Hilltop.
Yeah, it's got to be zero.
The number is zero.
It's a goose egg
for accidents. And it literally has no problems.
It's funny. If you go watch it, people don't know what to do sometimes.
Yeah, they pause.
But. Okay.
What's the penalty? It's a delay. It's no wrecks.
It's uncomfortable. Nobody likes them, and that's why there aren't wrecks. Because people are kind of skittish, just like traffic calming, which I know we have no time to get into it, but this is starting on Cervantes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've actually started installing the median.
The walls and the
we're going to start putting up the pedestrian barrier. We'll see. So,
yeah. So I know we probably don't have time for this, but since I got Alan here and Andrew what's going to happen with the accesses over on the Chappie James Bridge? My good friend Christian Wagley told me that FDOT has continued to not accommodate the walk across and the bicycle
crosswalks
over there. What's going to happen with that?
The walk on that, the redesign of that, the failure of engineering, all of it. Yeah, and certainly FDOT is not particularly friendly to letting people up on the bridge even when it was open. You got 10 seconds, Alan. You want to say anything?
I'll just say let's wait and see how it looks when it's all built. Remember how bad Publix was going to be on Cervantes? Then it got built and everyone loved it. Let's just wait and see. I don't think it's going to be terrible. It's not ideal, but it's pretty good.
Alan Gray, John Singley, thanks so much for the time.